Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 33 of the Self-Help Podcast with me and my not-laughing partner, Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm laughing. I'm good.
What were you just saying? Someone asked you...
I was saying yesterday, someone said to me, why is it that you two, that's you and I, are always laughing at the beginning of the podcast? And I said it's because it takes so many goes for us to get to this point.
Oh, not that many. This is take two.
This is take two, yeah. We're doing well today.
How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good, yeah.
Jolly good, yeah. This week we're chatting about how to deal with difficult people, aren't we? Yeah. So we've got lots of experience of that, all of us.
Yeah, yeah. I have to deal with you.
And I have to deal with you every week, trying to stop you from laughing at the start of the show every week.
Yeah, look, I've stopped tweeting. Come on, now.
That's true. For those of you who are new to the show, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk and you'll find out all about myself and Sean and the work that we're doing at Live in the Present with your wife, Ree.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We have good news. If you're watching things on Facebook... Ree has been on the course the last 2 days. She'll be running groups for HOPE, which is it's about people surviving things like cancer and HIV and, and MS, stuff like that, which is amazing work. But we're going to get her on and we're going to make her do a podcast.
Well, she wants to, doesn't she? I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what she's like? She's keen, but we have to actually get her here to do it. So...
One day there's going to be a knock at my door and it will just be you, it'll be Ree there as well.
So Ree, I'm sure you're listening to this, next couple of weeks we're going to do a podcast.
Let's go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll be a sensation.
Yeah. She'll change the world.
There's a podcast, The Fizzle Show, which is a business podcast which I love, and the three of those guys that do it, they have a few drinks while they're doing
the
show.
That's the key. Well, we have to do this first thing in the morning, then we have to do it.
Well, yeah. If Ree's at all nervous, we could have a few mojitos, pina colada, I don't know. Mm. We'll sort out some cocktails.
She likes Prosecco.
Prosecco. Okay, Prosecco. We'll get a bottle of that.
Prosecco or champagne.
How's your week been, Sean?
It's good. It's good. Life is good. Very, very busy. Back into it in the new year.
So we're 2 weeks into January now, so are people... losing hope on the resolutions and you've got the January.
Yeah. Amazing. And that's actually quite real, working with people the last couple of days, people that are flagging on their plans.
Yeah.
And we know you have to be persistent and consistent for 30 days and then another 60 days to make it really work. Mm-hmm. And it's getting people's heads on the right way around. And I think New Year's probably the worst time to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the dark end of the year. People's energies are low.
So every time,
you need to be making decisions in the summer when it's bright and good.
So New Year's resolutions in June.
Maybe we should have a new year in the middle of the year. That would be good.
I was talking to my grandma over Christmas. She feels sorry for me and more my little lad, who we both have birthdays around Christmas.
Yeah, it's not good, that.
She feels sorry for us because we have to wait a whole year, or well, William does, till he gets more presents. So she's going to give him his own, like, midsummer birthday.
Yeah, why don't you do that? Have an official birthday. Mm. An actual birthday. The Queen does, doesn't she?
So. Yeah. Can you change it? Yeah. Oh, I could probably.
It means you have two, then, don't you? You have your natal birthday and then you have your official birthday.
I'm good in Photoshop. I could probably alter his birth certificate quite easily.
Give him two.
Yeah. I've got down January blues here as well, but I haven't really. I had a client email me yesterday who said in their email, I've got the January blues, Ed. How are you doing on the web project? Let's get moving.
Yeah.
Need a bit of energy.
Yeah, no, I think that's real. It's hibernation time.
Yeah.
Of course, if you're down the other end and you're listening to this in Australia or New Zealand, you might be thinking, well, what are you talking about?
40-plus degree heat in Australia. Yeah. It's actually stupidly hot over there.
Yeah, it's the other way, isn't it?
Tennis players passing out in the heat and all that.
Yeah, yeah. Because their winter will be the time when they will be at their low episode.
Yeah, but winter in Australia, was it? Oh, it gets down to like 15, 20 degrees C. You poor things.
I could cope with that. Yeah. T-shirts and shorts weather. Yeah.
Right, should we move on to our topic, Sean?
Yeah, sure.
How to deal with difficult people. We've all got them in our lives, haven't we? There's no avoiding them completely.
I want to start off with the idea that we're all the same. so that if you look at us physically, we've got the same things, heads, bodies, arms, legs. And if you look inside somebody, psychologically or emotionally, it's the same. There's the same bits in there. Mm-hmm. So we're all the same in that sense. But then the bits of us are mixed together in such a way that we have this feeling of individuality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because of that, all the behaviours that we can ever experience are within us. Within us there is the saint and the sinner and the murderer and the thief. All those things are within us. They're within everybody. It's what do we pay attention to. What tends to happen is when we find somebody difficult, it's because they're resonating with a part of us that we can't come to terms with.
Okay.
Yeah. A bit of us that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go back to that idea. It's certainly true in therapy, but I would say this about everybody. I mean, when I see a client for the first time, my question to myself is, what is it this client's come to teach me? I think that's true in every bit of life.
Yeah.
So whenever I meet anybody, there's always, okay, what's this about? But when I meet someone who's difficult or I find a problem, then that's even more so. What is it this person's come to teach me? What can I learn? How can I grow from this?
Yeah.
How can I develop it? Yeah.
This topic was, sent to us by a listener, actually, who I won't say the name or the specific example, but basically they've got a family member, a sibling, who they were kind of forced to be near over Christmas because we all get together over Christmas, and generally we all obviously love our families, but even within families there can be people who you don't get on as well with. And this listener emailed me prior to Christmas, and she was quite apprehensive by the sounds of it about, well, being forced to be with this person who they've known their whole lives, but it would seem has got increasingly difficult as time's gone on. So she was asking for help and advice. Me not being a therapist, I kind of struggled a little bit.
I think that there's a variety of things around that. That in that, when you have someone who is difficult, it could be the workplace or it could be a family,
mm-hmm.
and their behaviour is getting worse over time, it's because no one's dealt with it in the beginning. So that in the workplace, when you get a difficult person in a team, usually it's because they weren't managed in the beginning and they've been allowed to become difficult.
Yeah.
And that's true in a family too. Is that if as a family we don't actually collectively work with and communicate with the person who's being difficult, and we allow their behaviours to run, and we say, oh, it's just Johnny, it's the way they are, and we allow that behaviour to embed, then in the end they become more and more of a problem to the family because that's what they've learned to be.
Right.
We've allowed them to be that.
So would you suggest tackling it head on at some point?
I think most people in that situation, when you're attempting to deal with it, you can't have an effective communication when everyone's in a high state of arousal. It just goes bonkers. What you have to do is, when the person is flat and placid, is you have to sit down and have a rational conversation. And maybe what you do is you agree behaviours for what's going to happen if it kicks off again. Yeah, and then if you can negotiate something like that, and sometimes it takes two people or an arbitrator or a mediator or someone as well in it. If you can agree to that, then you have a course of action to get into when things go wrong, when it starts to get difficult again.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think that there is a fundamental, and it's that there are people that you can change and people that you can't, people that are open for change, people that are not. And in my terms, I wrote a book called The Frog Snogger's Guide, the first book I ever wrote, which I'll come back to in a bit. But in that, the idea of snogging a frog was, if you get the communication right, then they turn into a prince or a princess for you, so you can achieve what you want.
Okay.
But if they're a toad, all you get is a nasty taste in your mouth. And it's important to realise the difference between frogs and toads, because in a psychological sense, a frog is a regular person with issues. A toad is someone who's on the psychopathic spectrum. And they're never going to change. It doesn't matter what you do.
Right.
And if you know that, the coping mechanism is to move away from that person and allow them to be whatever they need to be. But if you can't change somebody, it's no good just bashing your head on a wall.
Okay.
Yeah, and in that sense, and I've dealt with this loads of times over the years in families, that idea that blood's thicker than water, well, there comes a point when there isn't. You know, when,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, if you look at any of the cases that have been going on in British law about paedophilia, and we have lots of people in
loads
the news right now, yeah, and those people would have had a position in their family. If it turns out that it's true and these people have done all the things that are accused of them, it's a bit like Jimmy Savile's family had to take his gravestone away and all that kind of stuff and backpedal on all this, isn't he a wonderful person?
Yeah.
And so the family starts to, in some ways, disown this person because they don't identify them as one of us anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of them, you know. But when we're dealing with difficult people in a family, it doesn't necessarily mean just because they're family that we have to hang in and bash our head on a brick forever.
Yeah.
And in the States, they call that tough love. You know, you have to get tough with people sometimes to get change or to survive it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't advocate people hanging in situations, in marriages or family situations that are effectively killing them or damaging them in a deep way just because we should. I don't believe in that kind of stuff. We have to be responsible for ourselves.
This is your reputation as Sean Offord, that bastard that breaks couples up.
Yeah, I think it's true. when I was running a lot of the courses and people would grow and develop on the courses, and sadly, the person that they were with was fixed and wouldn't grow and develop or change.
Yeah.
And the relationship became null and void. And there was a time when I was running a lot of courses where, right, I was known as that bastard who splits people up. Not that there were loads of people, but there were enough for people to recognise.
You didn't get any bricks through your window or anything like that?
No, I had a bit of abuse from people, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Difficult people.
Difficult people, yeah. But from their perspective, you were the difficult person,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, and that's the point, isn't it? Is that it may be that there's someone that you think is amazing and you say to me, oh, you really should get to know them, they're incredible. And I get to know them and I think, no, this person's a pain in my backside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is that this person represents problems in me that I've never dealt with.
Yeah.
And for you, they resonate with something with you, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that I mean, I deal, I've said it before, I deal with a lot of clients that other people won't deal with. And I don't mind taking people on, like the paedophiles or the murderers or whatever. And I'm prepared to work with anybody. But I know lots of therapists who absolutely refuse to work with.
They have moral objections and all.
Yeah, whereas as far as I'm concerned, we are all on the same path and we are all in a mess. And if we are all working together, we all sort ourselves out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people, for me, on the planet that you don't discount or throw away, accepting the fact that there are people that I have attempted to work with and it has been impossible.
Yeah.
And I've said to the person, okay, we need to stop doing this because we're not getting anywhere with it.
Right.
And that's true.
But initially, do you just like the challenge of working with difficult people in China? Do you get a little kick out of
I don't know. I mean, the way I see it is that, especially if I'm in one of the hospitals and I'm doing a clinic, and you go out and you get your clinic list, and on the list there's a name, and the first thought is, oh my God, not that person again,
because
they're going to be difficult. And so the thing that I attempt to do at that point is to look at myself and say, okay, what is it that makes them difficult in me? How can I deal with this or change this?
Yeah. You know?
And it could be that the changing means that I just become more tolerant of their inability to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about... It's a funny little example, maybe, but there's a person that I meet with very rarely. I don't know her that well, but she's kind of at a setting that I go to every now and again, and every now and again she'll be there, and she usually will sit near me in the vicinity. And she's kind of known in this place as being a bit of a grump. Bit of a grump. And no one really wants to talk to her because they know she's a grump. I kind of relish the challenge of trying to get a smile out of her or get a positive response. So I'll kind of, for my own pleasure, just like be really happy in front of her. But to her, I'm probably the really... She probably hates meeting me because I'm out and there's that happy bugger. There's that happy bugger.
Does she ever respond positively to you?
No, I get kind of wry smiles every now and again. But I like the negative ones just as much. It just makes me chuckle even more. I think, what's this lady's problem?
Yeah. And that idea that for somebody that we're identifying as a grump or a miserable or a moaning person, for us, is an issue. For them, it's their normality.
Yeah.
And they may feel good in that. Having something to moan about makes them feel good.
Yeah. So in that case, maybe what I'm doing isn't that great because I'm not helping her at all. I'm just doing it for my own pleasure.
I don't know. I mean, I think that the idea of encouraging someone to look positively, I mean, how about you go up to her and you say, hello, how are you? Oh, you're looking so well today. And you're trying to get them to click into the positive rather than saying, oh dear, what's the matter with you? You're okay.
Yeah,
and then click into the negative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and in that sense, we talked a while ago about nudging,
yep.
About how do we nudge people into changing, and very often, when you're dealing with a difficult person, nudging them into being what it is that they need to be or you need them to be,
mm-hmm.
Isn't manipulation. It's a communicative process.
Yep.
Yeah. So I want to identify three parts of a person that are in all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the three bits that are important when you're dealing with someone who's difficult, is that each of us have a thinking bit, a feeling bit, and a doing bit. So in psychology, that's called cognition, affection, and behaviour. Yeah. So we all think about things, we all feel about those things, and it leads to us doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those three bits of us are really important because the thinking bit is the bit that describes who I am. If you say, Sean, who are you? And I start to describe myself, that's my thinking bit. If you say to me, how do you know when people love you or like you? That's my feeling bit. Yeah, how do I show people I love like them? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you say to me, where do you place your security? What is it that makes you feel safe? I'm starting to describe my behaviour because I will do things to make me feel safe.
Okay.
Yeah? When you're communicating with people, you need to understand those things. And it isn't that difficult to do once you get into the habit of doing it. But if you go against someone's secure base, then all you do is create more problems because they feel insecure and
yep.
they'll fight back. But if we look at that idea of thinking, feeling and doing, there are different kinds of personalities that have a lot of thinking and not a lot of feeling or doing in the way that they are as people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people are all feelers, but they don't think about what they're feeling, so they're more volatile.
Yep. Yeah.
And there are some people that can think and do but have no emotion in it. Yeah. And in the Snoggers guide, Frog Snoggers guide, that we describe those as blue people. And blue people particularly can be difficult because they have good minds and they can logically justify everything that they do.
Right.
And they're good actors, they will go and good doers, they will go and do lots of stuff. But emotionally, which means that the empathy button doesn't work, yeah, the emotions are very low. So you get this person who can be highly critical of everybody else and can be quite uncaring in their communication without even realising they're doing it because the empathy button's been switched off.
Okay.
Yeah, and those are the kinds of people, it's the emotions that are the one. The two people or personality types I get the biggest problems with when I'm working in teams, in organisations, are the ones where the emotions are switched off, the blue types, so that you just get this cognition and behaviour without no empathic feeling. Or the reverse, where you get someone who's all emotion and they can't rationalise them, so they become volatile and they scream and shout and carry on.
Huh.
And us Brits aren't good with people like that. So people that scream and shout and carry on usually get what they want.
Yep.
Yeah, because we're too embarrassed to tell them to shut up. Or we're scared of their emotion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can relate to that. Mm-hmm.
But it's the emotional bit that usually is the bit that is the biggest problem, either the lack of it or the too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll get the person who's the behavioural bully, who probably actually needs, this isn't politically correct to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. Is that when you get someone who doesn't think much and doesn't feel much, but their world is all about doing and behaviour, and they will say to you things like, it's what you do that counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That very often you have to communicate with that person physically to get your point across. And that may mean that you have to give them a cuddle. Yeah. Or it might actually mean that you need to smack them in the mouth.
Slap around the chops.
Because sometimes the only communication that will work with someone is to communicate with them in a way that they understand.
Okay.
And it's not politically correct these days to punch people in the mouth, but there's times when it is a very effective communication.
Yeah. I'm sure it works in certain scenarios.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Not in the consulting room, though. It's not a tactic.
I don't know. I think that, you know, my thing always is, and it comes from where I come from in more the East End of London as a background, is that I'm a pacifist. I really am a nice guy. I am a lovely guy.
I can vouch for him, listeners. Yeah, he's all right.
But if you cross the line and you start to get physical with me, I'll kill you. And that just comes from the law of the jungle, which is if you get someone on the ground, you make sure they don't get up again because they're going to be more angry when they get up. I mean, it was that kind of world that I grew up in. And from my point of view, there are times when physical communication is the only appropriate communication.
Or be a fast runner.
Yeah. And well, that's a physical escape. Communication, isn't it? I mean, fight and flight is either you hit it or you move yourself away from it. It's a physical response.
Yeah.
And maybe moving yourself away from it at a high rate of knots is a good policy, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's weird, all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, okay, what kinds of people do you find difficult?
I don't know. I guess people that talk a lot, I find a lot off-putting.
Do you mean they're talking rats droppings? Or?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, I'm just thinking about people that I've worked with that aren't open to ideas and suggestions, and it's their way or nothing, and they're just talking at you constantly and not willing to listen to anything. So
yeah,
that makes
that to me is that's the blue bit where you've got someone who can think and do, but they don't have that emotional empathy in the middle.
Yeah, people aren't willing to learn, I guess.
Yeah,
frustrate me. You know, I'll show them something or I'll try and put something in front of them that is could be life changing to them. And they're just not open to it at all, and that's really frustrating for me.
But. Yeah. And that's true for me if I'm working with a couple, particularly. It does happen in teams, but if I'm working with a couple and one person in the couple cannot listen, they cannot hear, they don't have that emotional litmus paper to be able to feel what's going on, and the other person is really frustrated in their attempts to try and communicate,
mm-hmm.
because the fixed person just won't move.
Yeah.
That's a recipe for disaster in relationships, mm-hmm. or in teams. Yeah,
I read an article recently by a former footballer, or he probably still does play football, but he doesn't do it professionally anymore. Called Graham Lasso. He's a former England Chelsea left back, good player. Scored a really good goal against Brazil once at Wembley.
Right,
like it'll be remembered forever for. But anyway, he was playing in the 90s. And football is obviously quite a manly, white mate kind of game. And he didn't really fit into that category of person.
Was he a good footballer, though?
He was a very good footballer.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, not super, super world class, but he was really good, really good footballer.
Yeah.
And he was, rather on the team bus than talking about girls or this, that and the other and effing and blind, and he'd be sitting there reading the paper and he'd go to the theatre and stuff and he'd go on his holidays to like Norway and go travelling rather than going sitting on a beach in Benidorm or whatever. And he developed a bit of a reputation in like the dressing room at Chelsea, apparently, as a bit of an outcast really, and that then spread on to him getting jibes about his sexuality. Now he was married and he had kids. But still, he'd be Graham Lasso, that woofter, that puff.
Yeah.
And that spread into the stands, and he used to get a lot of abuse. It's turned out, it's come out from fans, and mainly from opposition fans, trying to wind him up, which he could see. He didn't like it, but he kind of, they're just trying to get at me. That's water off a duck's back. Then it spread onto the pitch and certain other players during the game.
So that would be the opposing players.
Opposing players would use that against him to wind him up, and that was the final straw. Like, that was too much for him. And you talked about instances where, I think it was Robbie Fowler, during a game was verbally abusing him and making kind of gestures at his backside and what have you. And he that was one step too far. And then he took it, he then reacted physically and tried to basically break Robbie Fowler's legs and any opportunity on the pitch. He tried to take retribution. So it's funny, there comes a point where dealing with difficult people, you can only take so much, can't you? Then you'll just snap.
I think the physical responses are the lowest common denominator.
Mm.
But when you've tried everything else and it gets down to that, that's all you've got left.
Yeah.
I suppose that's why people go to war.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to resolve things between, us and another country can't do it.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. If you look at it on an international scale or in terms of people against people,
Yeah.
The war is that last resort.
Yeah.
We've all got these nuclear weapons that we could unleash hell at any second, but we don't, obviously, because, well, not yet.
And have you ever heard of the idea of MAD, which is mutually assured destruction?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's that thing, isn't it? It's like, if any of us dare to press the button, the chances are we all go up.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Actually, I watched a documentary about the Hiroshima. That was really grim, actually. Well, obviously, not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're capable, humanity, aren't we, of some pretty terrible things. Thankfully, it's not... I mean, that was a... Well, they dropped another bomb not long after that, and that ended the war, pretty much. But
yeah.
But, I mean, we're capable of some horrific things, eh?
Yeah.
But a lot of good things, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the human mind has endless creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but it's interesting for me in terms of our responses, because when you look at our emotional response to a situation, whether we're talking about wars or politics or difficult people, and maybe politicians are quite often difficult people, maybe, you end up in a situation where the ones that we react to are the ones that are our problems. I mean, they're our stuff. So it's like I can observe somebody having difficult behaviours and I can think, that's really difficult, we need to do something about that. If I'm emotionally engaged in it, in the sense that it's starting to make me angry or upset, it means that there's stuff inside me that I haven't resolved. It's these bits of me that I haven't come to terms with.
Yep.
And that's the indicator. So from my point of view, as soon as we start to feel that emotional response to another person, which is negative or upsetting, that's when we need maybe even to go and see a therapist for a bit and understand what's going on and sort that bit of us out so we can go and communicate directly with that person without it being a problem.
Yeah, and ultimately we used this on the course, we used to say this a lot, but you can't change the world, you can only change yourself. So that applies in this
very
situation,
much,
especially
very much,
to
the
listener that emailed us originally about this topic.
But there are families, I do deal with them all the time, where there is a person. And Christmas is always a good time because families get together. And either that person is excluded and that's a problem, or they're included and that's a problem, or the family just doesn't get together and that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know? The best ways around those kinds of things are the family coming together and collectively deciding what they're going to do about the problem.
Yeah.
And then actually doing it. Yeah, and if that does mean that the person that is the problem is excluded, then that's something which is done consciously. There's that decision that we don't want that behaviour or that nastiness or that negativity with us in this situation. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's as long as it's a conscious process and we're making decisions.
Yeah, that'd be the grown-up thing to do, wouldn't it? It's tricky, I can imagine, but...
Yeah, but then that's why... Difficult people are difficult because we avoid it because of we don't want the consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But then, it's from my point of view, and it's true very clearly in the workplace, someone is a difficult person and people avoid it. And very often to placate someone who's difficult, and this is the worst thing that ever happens in the workplace, they get promoted to get them out of the way.
Yeah,
and it means that the person that's difficult gets more and more power to be even more difficult as they go along.
Blimey.
Yeah, and you get a lot of that in the public sector particularly.
Yeah, okay, we've got some self-help tips. We've got allowing and forgiveness here. They seem,
I think that the law of allowing, as we do on the course, as is in the book, Live in the Present, is very much about how we step away from and stop getting agitated about other people's behaviours.
Yeah.
And that way we're reducing the difficulty to ourselves.
Yeah, because ultimately you can only control your own thoughts and feelings, and you can control them.
Yeah, you can.
It might not feel like you can all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything, it's all a choice, isn't it, on how you feel?
Yeah, yeah. And there may be times when things are that tough that you need to call on the power of other people. Like, it may even be the police. You know, you have difficult people to deal with and you need to do something about it. You know, you've got difficult neighbours, you've got whatever.
Blimey, maybe some kind of abuse going on and you need to make that phone call to the people that are going to come and help you.
Yeah. So, I mean, from that point of view, we might need to step outside of ourselves. If we're in it and there's nothing that we can do about it directly, then the law of allowing, letting go, And certainly the issues of forgiveness, which is always a powerful issue when someone has been very bad to you, and the idea of forgiveness. But if you think about forgiveness as foregoing or letting go, then you're making your own life easier by doing that, which is good. I think that the other thing for me fundamentally is seeing difficult people as a learning point, not as a problem. So if you meet someone difficult and you approach it from the point of view of, okay, what does this person mean to me and what is it that I need to do to overcome this difficulty, then it changes, you change.
Yeah.
And that issue, whatever it is never a problem again in the whole of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It may be that the person who's difficult doesn't actually change because you can't change them, but you've changed you. That's a bit simple.
You've moved above it and off you go on your own little, on your own journey.
Yeah. So from that point of view, I don't really find people that difficult anymore. I do see it as in that very real way. It's like, okay, how can I solve this? What's the solution? And sometimes the solution is to say, okay, I'm not going to have anything to do with that person anymore, and that's okay.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. I like that.
Yeah.
And your resource of the week, Sean?
It is The Frog's Strongest Guide.
As mentioned earlier.
First book I ever wrote. And it's about how do you get on with people that you don't like? How do you do that? And it looks at different kinds of frogs and toads, because it's The Frog's Dogger's Guide, and different strategies that you can use in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and what to do when you meet a toad who you can't get effective communication with, and how can you protect yourself against it?
Cool.
Yeah, so it covers all those kinds of areas.
And it's got a good cover on it as well. Didn't Ken Livingstone... Was that the book that?
He
it was on his library. Yeah,
he gave it to the when he was the mayor of wherever.
Yeah,
he gave it to lots of staff, and it's appeared on quite a few book lists on courses, and there was a guy called Sir John Harvey Jones,
mm-hmm.
who was the Alan Sugar of the kind of 80s 90s, and he was using it, and he wrote it in some of the later prints of it. He's got a bit that he put in the front.
Nice.
Where he was giving it to people, yeah. That was good.
Very good.
So it is a useful book, and I do actually use it with people. It could do with an update.
Do with a refresh.
Yeah, I need to do Son of Frog Snogger or something.
A new cover as well, maybe. Yeah. It's a distinctive cover, that illustration. It needs a bit of Ed Lamb work on it, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do a rewrite of Frog Snoggers. Yeah.
Is that a frog or a toad on the front?
I think it's a frog.
You reckon?
Yeah, no, yeah, I think toads are browner.
Mm.
It's green.
You got bigger, I don't know, backs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool book.
Yeah. People have said to me, is that Ree on there?
No comment. My resource of the week is a free ebook, which is called How to Achieve Less. And this was tweeted by Stephen Fry a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it's quite interesting. I've looked into it. It's cool. It's by the guys at a little non-profit called Life Squared. I'll put the link on the show notes, but if you go to lifesquared.org.uk, you'll probably find your way there. How to Achieve Less, and it's all about, there's a lot of books and self-help stuff which achieve more, get more, how to get rich, all that kind of stuff, and this is just saying just take a step back, take a deep breath, and just figure out whether you should be striving for more and more in your life when less is probably a better option.
I think that whole idea of like downsizing, decluttering, cleaning out and getting rid of is a very powerful thing.
Yeah.
The more things you have, the more your head's clouded.
Mm-hmm.
And that was our whole thing about Stuffmas over Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how eBay's doing. Our friend Nicola from Pink Spaghetti, who does things like that for you, he helps them clear their stuff out and get rid of
it. She does. We'll put a link to it to her eBay, little profile as well.
Yeah.
Nikki Spaghetti.
Yeah, Pink Spaghetti. and that's cool, isn't it? It's like if you get rid of stuff, simplify your life, make your life easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Important.
Yeah. So I need to have a think about the difficult people in my life. So we might not have a show next week, Sean.
If I've managed to... You mean because I find you so difficult?
We've cut each other loose.
Yeah.
We'll have our own rival podcasts.
Yeah. So they're talking to myself.
Cool. Next week we are going to be talking a bit more about living in the present, and the title we've come up with is What's Stopping You From Living in the Now? And this again was triggered by a listener that's emailed in, and he wants us to talk more about that, and it kind of makes sense because it's what our company is called.
Yep.
and it's something we talk about a lot anyway, so
yeah,
we're talking about the barriers that stop us from living in the present.
Yeah,
you fancy that, Sean?
Yeah, I do. And for me, that's a daily topic with all the people I work with.
Part of it is going to be difficult people, you know, how to hop over those barriers.
Yeah, you can't beat being in the now.
No.
It's a great place to be.
It is indeed. Literally, if you want to live in the present, go to liveinthepresent.co.uk, where you'll find all the show notes and links to everything we've just discussed. If you want to help us out, share this show with a friend, either via our iTunes link or via our website, which I've just given you. Put it on Twitter or Facebook, and we will love you forever, won't we, Sean?
We will, yeah.
It's official. But
you'll come off our difficult persons list.
Yeah, you're off the blacklist. Head over to the website for more information about us. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. And have a good week.
And you have a good week too.
And everyone out there,
yeah.
Take it easy.
Yeah, you take care.
See ya.
Bye.